Hello team, and welcome to episode 465 of the Simply Fit podcast. In today's episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Lance Frank. This whole conversation with Lance was really quite enlightening. I've heard of Kegels and the benefits of doing pelvic floor exercises, but this conversation took my understanding to a whole new level, especially considering most of the conversations we have about pelvic floor are traditionally focused on women. But did you know that the worldwide prevalence of erectile dysfunction is expected to increase to 322 million men by 2025? Yet how many conversations are we hearing about this? And did you know that many of what are believed to be psychological challenges when it comes to performance could be improved or eradicated through something physical? If you're a male and you want to improve your sex life, listen to this whole episode. And if you're a woman who would like to point your partner in this direction, keep listening and share the episode with him. In this episode, you can expect to learn what we've all been getting wrong about Kegels and why stopping the flow of your urine or doing pelvic floor exercises at traffic lights could be completely wrong for you, what type of results men can see if they start working on their pelvic floor health, along with what tool Lance recommends that reports a 92% success rate of stronger erections. So without further ado, Dr. Lance Frank. Dr. Lance Frank, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is truly mine. I'm very excited to get into our topic of conversation today. As I just mentioned to you off air, it's not a conversation we've gone through before, and it's not a topic that's particularly well discussed or explored. I'm sure it is in your world. You probably spend all day, every day talking about the topics that you do, but in general conversation, it doesn't seem to come up too much. So before we do dive into that, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do?
For everybody listening, my name's Lance Frank. I'm a physical therapist and based out of Atlanta, Georgia, over in the States. My background is in sports and orthopedic physical therapy, but after physical therapy school, I furthered my kind of career and my focus more on pelvic floor dysfunction and pelvic health in general. Right now I have a clinic in Atlanta that serves mostly pelvic floor disorders. Most of my patients tend to fall in the male gender. Most of my patients have penises, and I think on the probably about of my caseload every week, I have 30-ish people. Probably 25 of those are men. Other five are female or orthopedic conditions. So I see this stuff all day long. It's all I work with.
Yeah, I can imagine. So there must have been a ton of different routes you could have taken your career path down when you went to the world of physiotherapy. Why pelvic health?
Yeah, I initially went to physical therapy school. I wanted to work with high level athletes and like ideally a professional like sports team. That was the ultimate goal. And then when I was in PT school, I did my orthopedic rotation. And while I was there, one of my instructors was a dual kind of ortho pelvic PT. Half of her caseload was like half and half. And so that was really where I was first exposed to pelvic health, physical therapy, and what all, you know, conditions could be treated and helped. And I realized that there was just a huge need in the male population for it. Mm. Most clinicians that work in that specialty are female themselves. And a lot of the females don't see men for pelvic floor disorders. And so there's a huge, it's not often that men are the underserved population, but there's a huge need in my specialty for male pelvic floor clinicians. So after I graduated, I got offered a job as a pelvic PT, and that's kind of where I started my career.
I like that. So a lot of interest in that area, a massive need to be served, and then an opportunity that came up as well. It's like all the stars aligned in that sense. And you're absolutely right. It's not often that there isn't like an underserved, and maybe when we can look at the mental health side of things, that's another underserved area. But when you hear pelvic floor or pelvic health, I mean, your mind as a person of the general population or even a health and fitness coach like myself immediately goes towards women and mainly post-pregnancy, right? Like that's initially where your mind goes to. So why is it that men's pelvic floor health has been so basically missed out essentially and overlooked?
Well, I think for one, that assumption that you just created is that, you know, only I hear it all the time. Like I only thought women had pelvic floors. Like, I didn't know men had pelvic floors as well. And so that's a huge misconception that, you know, automatically limits a lot of the population, that they just have this inherent belief that, like, they don't even have the same muscles as women. But also, we live in this world, this society of just toxic masculinity, where, you know, there's a lot of shame and embarrassment around our private parts, and especially when things don't work or they're not working correctly, or there's some sort of dysfunction happening down there. Like, nobody wants to talk about that. And so for one, it's just not talked about, kind of what you said. It's not talked about in the general population. People don't share, you know, when things are going wrong with their things downstairs. And so a lot of my patients either come from Google, like they're Googling their symptoms and trying to figure out what's going on with them, and they stumble across my clinic website, or luckily in Atlanta, I have a huge network of physicians that I've kind of built as my tribe, and they know what I do and what I can treat. And when patients come in to see them for various things, they know if it's not within the medical sphere, it might be within, you know, the musculoskeletal or, you know, therapeutic sphere. And so they'll send them over my way. But yeah, I think just overall, just toxic masculinity and like shame and not really, you know, as a whole, this not being discussed among the general population is a large part is like why there's a huge need for what I do.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And if we zoom out for a second, and usually, again, when we think about seeing our physiotherapist or our physician, it's usually because something is quote unquote wrong. So I am under the impression that we're not just working with people who have challenges in that particular area, but I should imagine that most men should focus on their pelvic floor health, irrespective of the situation that they're in. So can you give us some reasons as to why that should be the case? Obviously, prevention of difficulties that we might have, but can you give us some reasons as to why it's maybe just as important for men to work on that as opposed to spending too much time on their biceps, for example, in the gym?
Right. I mean, overall, just health and sexual health is important. I mean, just like you said, we work our biceps, we work our legs, we work our glutes, our quads. You know, why not work the pelvic floor as well? It's the same type of muscle as the muscles of the pelvic floor, particularly the genitalia, aka the penis. The base of them, the core of them, are the same type of muscle tissue as every other muscle in our body that we have the ability to move and control. They have the ability to be strengthened, and they also have the ability to gain flexibility. And so learning how to, you know, control those muscles and develop them over time, work on strengthening, work on relaxation of those muscles and flexibility, is just going to overall improve sexual health, aka better erections, better, you know, orgasms, might be able to last longer with, you know, so premature ejaculation might be able to help with that. There's lots of conditions that, you know, if you're focusing on sexual wellness and pelvic health preventatively, some conditions might inherently be, you know, avoided in the future.
And let's dive into those conditions, because I'm particularly interested in what you're mainly seeing people for. Maybe it is the sexual performance side of things, but what are some of the repercussions that we can have? I can imagine it happens a little later in life. Obviously, maybe for a general amount of people, it could end up being in their 20s and 30s. But my understanding would be maybe you're seeing people who are 40, 50, 60 years old. Is that correct in saying, or is that a misconception as well?
That's also a misconception. I would say, you know, the bulk of my caseload are men under the age of 40. And it's a bulk, a lot of chronic pelvic pain. I see a lot of pelvic pain, just pelvis in general, you know, genital pain, testicular pain, hip pain, low back pain, SI joint pain, just anything that attaches into the pelvis could be considered pelvic pain under that umbrella. But also there's a condition called prostatitis or chronic pelvic pain syndrome that often gets kind of lumped into this condition of a bacterial infection, but it's actually a pelvic floor disorder. I see a lot of that in the clinic. I see a lot of erection issues, you know, whether that's pain with erections or erectile dysfunction or, you know, difficulties maintaining an erection. I see premature ejaculation, I see pain with ejaculation, a lot of pain conditions. I would say pain types of pain conditions make up the kind of the bulk of my caseload, but also just erectile dysfunction. So the older population that I do treat tend to be patients that are post cancer treatment. So like a prostatectomy or the removal of their prostate for prostate cancer. I see a lot of those patients for incontinence or ED, erectile dysfunction as well. But I would say those make up the kind of the biggest chunk of my caseload. There are other some like random offshoot diagnoses like Peyronie's disease, just like a curvature of the penis, or something called hard flaccid, where patients, you know, it feels like they're erect, but it's they're actually flaccid and it's painful. It's a vascular kind of a blood flow issue. But yeah, I'd say those are the major ones that I see.
Yeah, there's a massive world of these potential challenges that we can go through. But I can imagine unless you're someone like yourself or someone who's going through those challenges, you would actually have no idea about that. And how well known is this in the States? Because I can imagine going to the doctor in the UK with a problem like this. First of all, you'd have to have the courage and bravery to go see probably your female GP. That's the first part. And then the second aspect is for them to actually take you serious. And then the third part is for them to actually do something valuable about it. I feel like they would just send you directly to a, you know, like an STI clinic or something along those lines versus anything along those lines. So how easy is it to get treated for something along those lines? How, you know, I mean, I guess your books are full because it doesn't sound like it's something that people are doing too much of.
Unfortunately not. It really just depends kind of regionally where you're at.
Yeah.
Fortunately in Atlanta, like in large metro urban areas, it's not uncommon for there to be a plethora of pelvic physical therapists.
Okay.
Where there does seem to be an issue is even though there are a large number of pelvic physical therapists, a lot of them will be female and a lot of them likely won't see men. And so for male pelvic floor disorders, there's not a lot of resources out there. It's getting better, I will say, since I started 7 years ago, but there's not a lot of clinicians out there that are willingly ready to treat this population. And in the medical community, you know, you kind of described it. You go see your GP, they think that you have an STI or, you know, a UTI, and they put you on rounds and rounds of antibiotics, and, you know, your symptoms get better for a little bit and you stop taking the antibiotics and the symptoms return, and it's this hamster wheel. And so you go back to your GP, they prescribe you more antibiotics, and it's this like negative feedback loop where patients get stuck in. I see patients that have had symptoms for, you know, I've had patients of over 10 years before get stuck in this like cycle of the medical system that there. And it's not, I shouldn't say it's any fault of the medical community, because a lot of times they just don't know. You don't know what you don't know. And some of the physicians that I've spoken to and met with and networked with, like, they didn't even know we had a pelvic floor. Like a colorectal surgeon that now refers to me didn't learn that we had a pelvic floor, a group of muscles in our pelvis, until his fellowship year of his medical, you know, license. Mm-hmm. And so it's not something that's taught in the medical and at least over in the States, the medical education system. And so it's no fault of the physicians unless they've had some sort of exposure to pelvic PT. A lot of these doctors don't know that we are out there and can help patients with certain diagnoses. It's a loop that people kind of get stuck in. And so unless you kind of are Googling symptoms, like I talked about, or you come across a random pelvic PT on social media, or, you know, you're lucky enough to have a physician that might have heard about pelvic physical therapy, a lot of people probably won't know that pelvic PT is out there and can help them.
Yeah. And hopefully this conversation is also contributing to the awareness of this as well. And I'm curious, especially to dig into the results. And the first question that came to my mind, you mentioned you see maybe some older gentlemen who maybe have gone through prostate cancer and have had treatment, and obviously you're helping them with incontinence and all those types of things. Could you expect to see someone potentially, is it a case of saying, okay, we can make your life quality a little bit better? Or is it a case of saying, well, actually we can pretty much remove this entirely and we can reverse this challenge entirely, what are the type of results we could expect?
So kind of both, yes and. Everybody's body is different. Every patient is different. Every type of procedure that people have is different. And so the way that they recover from it and rehab from it is going to be different.
Sure.
For things like, you know, we're just going to go with a basic classic example of somebody who's gone through prostate cancer and they've had their prostate removed. Typically, you know, research is very strong in the correlation between like improved quality of life and pelvic PT post prostatectomy. And so the patients who go through pelvic rehab after they've had their prostate removed have better outcomes with urinary incontinence and erectile function than those who don't. But there's a lot of research to support that. And so it's
just
not to say that.
Is the speed important as well? Do they have to kind of do it kind of immediately as soon as they can? Or could they pick it up 3 years after and still have the same type of results? I can imagine speed is a factor.
Speed is definitely a factor. The sooner we catch people, the better they're going to do. There's a urologist here in town that will even send me patients before they have their surgery so that we can do a couple weeks of prehab, and then they have their surgery so that they're better suited for rehab afterwards. They're starting at a higher baseline. And so if you can catch people, you know, even before their surgery, they're going to have even better outcomes. But again, you have to have a physician that knows that pelvic PT is a thing and is willing to send patients. There are some patients that, you know, as unfortunate as it is, don't really believe in what we do. And they think that what we do is witchcraft and hocus pocus. And so like, they just are like, no, you'll be fine. You don't need that. But there are physicians that will advocate for pelvic PT and refer out. And so the sooner that we can get people, the better that they're going to do. But back to your original question, their quality of life, you know, regardless of if we get them to 100%, I would argue, you know, and this is my career, this is my job. I do it on a daily basis. So obviously I'm a huge advocate for it, but I would argue that even if I don't get somebody to 100%, I'm going to improve your quality of life in some capacity. So it's not to say that pelvic PT is going to be for nothing, even if you don't get to 100% of your goals. You know, if somebody who has a constant kind of leaky faucet urinary drip all throughout the day after their surgery and they're changing out their pad or their briefs every hour, and if I can get somebody to maybe down to one pad throughout the entire day, like that's a huge quality of life improvement. Yeah. That's not disrupting their day to day. So like obviously I'm a physical therapist, so rehab I think is super important, but regardless of, even if I don't get to somebody to 100% of their goals, I'm going to move the dial towards progress in some capacity to improve their quality of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, a question that's going to be pretty down to the individual, but how long would this typically take? What course of rehab would someone have in terms of time frame? Like how many times would they be seeing someone like you per week? And it's all completely different depending on the person, because you could ask me the same question. I'm like, it really depends on the individual. But if you were giving me a rough ballpark average of how long someone might see you for in that situation and how much they would be doing on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, I'd be curious to know that.
You know, there's also a lot of research, as I'm sure you know, with strength training, there's a lot of research that says you have to be consistent with a program for at least six weeks to see noticeable changes in soft tissue and muscle tissue. And so my baseline, like I have a minimum of 6 visits for people. So I like to see people on a weekly basis, once a week for 6 weeks at least. There are some conditions where I know off the bat, like I'm going to need to see you for 12 sessions. So 3 months, and like, I'm going to need to see you weekly or every other week for at least 3 to 4 months. But then there are some conditions where, you know, 6 weeks, I think you'll be good. You know, we might need one or two after that, but at least 6 weeks of dedicated therapy and rehab and you should be good to go. It's very dependent on the person, obviously, and their compliance with their homework and their compliance to attending therapy. And it's very dependent on the diagnosis that they're coming in to see me for. But, you know, if I were to throw a blanket kind of coverage of all of the diagnoses that I'd see, I'd say anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks is a pretty standard plan of care.
That sounds pretty reasonable, to be completely honest. Like if I went for like a muscle issue to my physiotherapist, I would kind of expect the same. So to come off the back of something like cancer treatment and that to just be between 6 to 8 weeks, and obviously, like I said, the time frame definitely varies and it depends on compliance, as all things within health and fitness do. But at the same time, I think it's a pretty reasonable time frame, especially considering the quality of life that can be improved off the back of that as well. Okay, so that's super interesting. Now, you mentioned just a few minutes ago that some people see it as witchcraft and, you know, hocus pocus and all this type of stuff. So take me into the clinic and what are you actually doing? And maybe that's, you know, a big challenge for a lot of us. Sometimes we're so like, unless we see it, we can't really believe it. And because of the pelvic floor is all based with it, like their muscles that we can't see. So, you know, like, how do we know it's actually making progress? You know, if we can't see the bicep increase, you know, size in the mirror, are we actually working it? You know, people have that problem with their back in the gym, you know, and the back is just because they can't look behind them. They still don't train it. So imagine something that's kind of deep within you that you literally can't see. So take me into the clinic and talk to me about how you focus on that area and how you teach people through it. Because the thing I always hear when anytime you hear about men's pelvic floor, at least it's like, you know, when you're going to pee, just hold it for 5 seconds or something like that, or just squeeze and just hold it for 15 seconds. But it's very, very generic and it almost feels like it doesn't do anything. So talk us through a little bit more about what inside of your clinic looks like.
I mean, on a daily basis, it really depends on the diagnoses that's coming in the door. But I use, I guess I should talk about the setup of my clinic first before I talk about why I do what I do. So my clinic in Atlanta, I only see one person an hour. I'm very hands-on. I'm what's considered a manual therapist. So I spend a lot of time using my hands. And there are different types of settings here in the States, some that take insurance. And with those types of clinics, they're very exercise focused and you're usually not alone. You're with two or three other people at a time while one PT is managing all of your cases. And so it's very, very centric and centered around exercise, which, I mean, it's physical therapy, so it's going to be, but the setup of my clinic, you know, I don't take insurance, so I'm out of what's considered out of network over here in the States, and people pay me cash. And with that cash, that set amount, you get my full attention for that entire hour. And, you know, I hope I don't offend you by saying this, but I feel like watching people do exercises for an hour is like watching paint dry. Like, I feel like I can give, I fully believe that if I'm giving my patients something to do as homework, I fully expect that they're going to do it on their own time. I want them to get the things that they can't get outside of my clinic, which are my hands and my brain and my skill set. And so I spend some time going through exercises and exercises that I think are going to be valuable and help kind of move them towards their goals. I spend probably 10, 15 minutes at the end of their session going through exercises, reviewing them, updating, progressing, but it's not the bulk of my time with people. The bulk of my time is, you know, different manual modalities. Like, you know, there's over here, we have something called trigger point dry needling, similar to acupuncture, but it's a whole different kind of concept. Only similarity is we use the same needles, but the theories, the concepts behind it, completely different. There's a laser that I use. It's called shockwave therapy. It helps with soft tissue tension and blood flow and healing. We go through, there's a lot of like connective tissue release and myofascial release work, connective tissue manipulation. Sometimes, depending on the diagnosis that comes in, there might be some internal pelvic floor myofascial release work that has to be done. So internal meaning through the rectum. It is pelvic floor therapy, and some diagnoses will benefit from internal release work. Not everybody. I think another misconception is that if people come into pelvic PT, they're going to get a finger up the butt, and that's all pelvic PT is. And that's not all it is. I use other tools like, you know, a penis pump, for instance. There's different pumps that I'll use in the clinic to help facilitate penile health and exercising. And kind of what we talked about earlier, like you exercise your bicep, you exercise your quads, you know, you have to exercise the pelvic floor as well. And in addition to, you know, just general pelvic floor exercises, you mentioned kind of stopping the flow of urine or doing like pelvic floor contractions or what most people know of as a Kegel. while those are important, it's not all of pelvic floor strengthening and all of pelvic floor therapy. When we're talking about penile health in general, you know, there are the pump that I was referring to earlier, the exerciser pump. You use it while it's inflated, and or you put it on, you inflate the penis, and while the penis is erect, people are doing pelvic floor contractions to help improve blood flow, to help improve pelvic floor strengthening while with that erection in place. And so it's just another way to exercise the pelvic floor, and it gives you visual feedback. You know, with the penis erect, you can see a common cue that I'll give people is, you know, try to make your penis jump. And, you know, with the pump in place and the erection in place, you can literally see, you know, the penis jumping. And that is that, like, it's called biofeedback, that visual feedback that people are doing the pelvic floor contraction correctly. A lot of people will do a pelvic floor contraction incorrectly. They'll use their glutes, or they'll add their abdomen, they'll brace with their stomach, or they'll squeeze their inner thighs together rather than kind of fully contracting the pelvic floor in between their legs. So, I mean, there's a lot that I do in here, and it, you know, an hour sounds like a long time, but I see at least 7 or 8 patients a day, and the day just kind of flies by because I'm constantly kind of shifting all over the place with people.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. It really, really is. Like, it's a whole different world to me. I wouldn't have expected anything like that to be going on within your clinic, but it's fascinating to know that that's an option for people, because again, it's such a taboo subject. It's so behind closed doors. It's something that, like I said, you know, you go to your female GP and they probably can't really relate with this stuff either. And it's the same way that some men can't really completely relate with a lot of the female issues that are going on. So why is this not more well known about, plus like kind of popular? Like, I know that obviously a lot of it is done to do with an area that's maybe not easy to show to the public, but I'm thinking, like, why do they not do some like pelvic floor exercise, like classes, I should say, like within gyms and stuff like that? Like, when I think of, you know, all these surgeries that people get and everything along those lines, I think one of the biggest insecurities that a lot of men will have is maybe penis size or their ability to maintain an erection or sexual performance. Yet, you know, most people would be like, ah, maybe surgery is the answer. But it sounds like something like this could very much be plausible to improve a lot of the challenges that they have. And it's probably a lot less expensive, and I can imagine also a lot more natural too.
Yeah, I mean, all of those assumptions are correct. You know, it's funny you talk about like the gym and classes being available, and kind of every time I do a workshop about pelvic health, it completely fills up. Like, people are interested in this stuff. And like,
yeah, if
you approach people about it, people will listen. And but the thing is that like, there's not enough, you know, I'm only one person. And there's a lot of my mentors and friends and colleagues that are doing this work as well. And so I can't like take all of the credit, obviously, but you know, I'm only one person. And so doing these podcasts to help get the information out there that pelvic health is out there, and I do workshops and I do presentations and I network with different physicians and different gyms around the city. My gym, actually, that I just left from this morning, the gym owner approached me about doing a workshop with them about, you know, penile and prostate health, partnering with a urologist and kind of doing a little workshop for the gym members in a couple weeks. So it's gaining popularity. It's gaining like notoriety, I would say. You know, it sounds cheesy, but we live in a digital world these days, and social media has really, I feel like pelvic health as a profession is gaining notoriety through pelvic or through social media, you know, as well. I have a page on TikTok and Instagram, but it's larger on TikTok. And, you know, I started it during COVID when it was, you know, the beginning of the pandemic. I was bored, stuck in the house, didn't really have anything to do. And I was like, what can I do to still use my clinical skills, but really not treat people in the clinic? And so I was like, let me see if I just start a TikTok page, if people would like, you know, be interested in that. And I threw up one video and it went like completely mega viral. And overnight I had like 200,000 followers. And I was like, okay, I guess people are interested in this. Like, so I, you know, I post on social media mostly. I don't do it for any sort of, you know, compensation or any sort of anything other than just educational information, putting it out on the interwebs that hopefully it reaches whoever needs to see it. And I used to not do this, but I had so many inquiries about it that I started doing virtual consults with people, and I do them with people all over the world just to talk about what's going on with their bodies and if this is something that might help them. And if it is, who can I connect them with in their area to help kind of facilitate this rehab process? Because, you know, again, a lot of people haven't heard about this. And so when they do hear about it, they're like, whoa, I didn't know that there was help for this. I thought I was just stuck on these antibiotics or stuck. I had to have a surgery to fix it. So social media has really had a huge impact, at least on me and my ability to get, you know, the word out there. Through social media, I've met so many people like yourself that have wanted to interview me on podcasts and radio interviews and TV networks just to talk more about what I do and get the information out there.
You know what the challenge is? I think you have a marketing problem. You know, when you say penile health and pelvic health and partnering with a urologist, like in all respect, like I kind of get a little bit bored. But if you put a label on it, like improve your sexual performance within 6 weeks, stop having concerns when you go out for your date this Friday night, like solve all of these issues that, you know, people, men have around sexual performance. If you slap that label on the same thing that you do, you keep the integrity behind what you do, but you just slap some really attractive labeling and you target men who are obviously very interested in this, especially the younger generation, I think you would have an immediate turnaround in the type of people who are interested. I think just the language around it is maybe too medical in a sense, and that's maybe what puts people off, right? If I talk about people when it, from a fat loss perspective, I'm like, okay, we're gonna decrease your adipose tissue, we're probably even like, this is a thing, maybe even muscle and that is attractive, but if I say, okay, we're gonna decrease your adipose tissue, we might increase the size. No, again, it's too, like, it's wrapped up in good marketing. I think that's what the health and fitness industry has done really, really well, but maybe that's the next step for your industry. It's like, okay, well, maybe we need to label it with what people want and then deliver them what they genuinely need. So I might say, okay, we're going to do a 6-week fat loss program to get people really, really involved and excited. But really, we're working on their relationship with food, their habits and all this type of stuff, which is not so sexy and a little bit more boring, but it's actually what they need in order to get the results, right?
Right. No, you've hit the nail on the head. And that's also part of the reason why I created my TikTok page and social media page. To make it less sterile and less medical and bring some humor to it and make it more relatable. And so I 1,000,000% agree. A lot of pelvic health is very clinical and it is very medical, and it does kind of turn people off and makes people nervous about coming in. So marketing has a huge role in people's awareness and their willingness to come in for care.
And reshaping the narrative, which I think you're doing in today's conversation, right? Like, if everyone's got this understanding that they're going to get a finger somewhere that they don't want to have it, but now you're actually opening up their eyes to what the reality of the situation is, I think that people are going to be far more open to doing it. It's like kind of taking it out of the room in the clinic, and as you did with your TikTok, right? And then people are like, oh wow, we are actually very interested in this, and it's not kind of this weird, like you said, witchcraft that people think goes on inside the room of your appointment room, right? So when it comes to, let's take a healthy individual, right? I want to, again, now that we've got the attention of these young males who maybe don't have too many challenges, or maybe, and this is a good question as well, like if I thought of sexual performance and, you know, erectile dysfunction, all those types of things, the first thing that would come to my mind is more of a psychological issue versus a physical and physiological issue. So how do you separate the two? Because I think a lot of it is around performance anxiety and all this type of stuff, but it sounds like you've got a little bit of a different perspective here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. There are a lot of mental health and psychological aspects that go into pelvic health. You know, if you look at my intake form, I would say 90% of my patients have anxiety, depression, you know, some form of trauma that, and I ask about past trauma, and I leave it very vague about, you know, is that physical trauma? Like, was I in a car accident, or is that, you know, sexual trauma, was somebody sexually assaulted? I leave it very vague, and I have a line where people can like fill in if they want. But mental health and psychological, you know, aspects play a huge role into how well somebody's pelvic floor functions. We haven't really even talked about kind of the bones of pelvic PT and like the pelvic floor. Gotcha. But the muscle group as a whole, you know, I would say a very watered down kind of basic kind of explanation of pelvic floor dysfunction. People can either have an overactive pelvic floor or an underactive pelvic floor. And all that means is somebody with an underactive pelvic floor is that classical example of somebody who maybe has just given birth. So they're postpartum. They just need a little bit more strengthening. Their tissues have gone through a major trauma or a major, you know, sometimes they've gone through a C-section and those muscles just need a little bit more strengthening and actual rehabilitation. Yeah. Then there's the other side of the camp, the overactive pelvic floor. And those people tend to live in a Kegel all day long. So their pelvic floor is just tightly contracted and clenched all day long. You know, I'm sure you've heard the phrase tight asses. Like these are the classical, like overactive pelvic floor people. They just don't know how to relax their pelvic floor. And a lot of times it leads to incontinence or, you know, urine pain conditions or constipation, sexual performances, performance issues like premature ejaculation. It can even contribute to erectile issues. And so going back to I forgot your actual question that kind of got me on this tangent.
we were talking about like how much of it is psychological and how much is it physiological.
Right. Okay. Got it. So when we're talking about psychological aspects, you know, somebody with an overactive pelvic floor has a very upregulated nervous system. So, you know, that anxiety, that depression, that, you know, OCD or that trauma, their body at baseline is just upregulated. Like their nervous system functions at a higher standard, a higher state than maybe other people's do. And so that usually translates to just more muscle tension. People are just tight. People hear, you know, you hear people say all the time, like, I'm just always so tight. And it's like, well, you know, is that a function of how much you're using that muscle? Or is that a function of how over, you know, stimulated your nervous system is? Mm-hmm. And so psychological aspects play a huge role into how, you know, tightly wound somebody is. But from a physiological aspect, the muscle tension itself, you know, is very much a musculoskeletal condition. You know, if somebody has tight hamstrings, you know, you might think about stretching those hamstrings, or you might consider strengthening them and working on more flexibility in a you know, a guided workout movement like eccentric work to help lengthen the muscle over time. But from a physiological standpoint, there are some conditions that, you know, might be bacterial or viral in nature, or, you know, sometimes you're just born with it. You have a predisposition to some of these conditions. But I would say the bulk of the conditions that I treat are a function of an overstimulated and overactive pelvic floor driven by somebody's, you know, upregulated nervous system.
Yeah, it's interesting. And a lot of people ask me this question as well. It's like, if I've got mental health challenges, should I deal with those before my physical health challenges? Or which one should I focus on? And, you know, the answer I always give someone is that your mental health is always going to be benefited by improving your physical health. So if you are exercising, if you're getting outdoors, if you're sleeping well, you're hydrating well, and you're eating well, you may still have some form of anxiety and depression or some other mental medical challenge, but it's not going to nearly be as severe if you take care of those aspects first. So it's kind of the same with you, I guess, in the sense that, okay, a lot of this might be trauma-led or anxiety-driven, but at the same time, if you kind of make sure that everything from a physical and a physiological basis is covered, then maybe that's going to actually solve 50 to 60% of your challenge. It might even give you the confidence that, you know, that trauma knocked during that process to be like, oh, actually, you know, I'm doing something about this, which is giving me more, you know, mental confidence that this could actually do something for me and help me, etc. So I always think that there's benefits to both. You know, even if there is something psychological going on, I really think that you're missing out on a major player if you're neglecting the physiological aspect of it as well. So transitioning on to performance benefits. Take someone, hopefully like yourself or myself, who is relatively healthy in this area, right? We don't have any pelvic pain. We don't have any performance issues or anything along those lines. Can you talk about the potential benefits that people can get? Like, what are we looking at here from a sexual performance standpoint? Can we expect to be in the bedroom for 20 minutes longer? Can we expect increases in penile length? Because a lot of people are speaking about that at the moment in terms of like having something where they stretch their penis. And like, there's a lot of different things that are going on right now in kind of this world. So talk to me about the benefits that they can gain from doing a typical, and maybe that's a better question as well. It's like, what is a typical approach for someone who isn't necessarily dealing with a challenge, but just wants to improve things? Is it just a bunch of exercises? Is it still going to see someone like yourself? What does the rundown look like if you were giving me the ideal prescription based on the average dude?
So that's a very loaded question, and I'm going to try to do my best to answer it. First and foremost, like overall, kind of what we were talking about, mental health versus physical health, you know, regardless of what is going on with you in life, physical fitness and physical health is going to play a huge role in how well everything else functions, right? So like cardiovascular health, you know, mental health, your overall body, the way that things, our organs function. Like if we're healthy, if we're living a healthy, physically active life, just at baseline, everything else is going to function better. And so, you know, when we're talking about what people can do, if they're already, you know, maybe they don't have pelvic pain or maybe they don't have ED or premature ejaculation, there's always room for improvement, right? Like somebody out there might have the best pelvic floor health that there's ever been, but you know, there's always room for improvement. And so adding in physical fitness and physical activity is only going to improve your baseline. And so things like erectile strength or erectile duration, like how long you're able to maintain an erection versus how long you're able to maintain, you know, stave off an orgasm or ejaculation if there's premature ejaculation. Like living a healthier life and making sure your muscles are working optimally is first and foremost the most important. From a pelvic floor standpoint, you know, people are super interested of like, what can I do with my penis to make it work better? Or what can I do to make it longer? You know, there's lots of things out there on the market that claim that, you know, you'll improve your erection length or your penile length or, you know, improve your girth. And in the clinic, I'll talk about what I do in the clinic and what people can do at home. In the clinic, you know, I mentioned the exerciser pump, and that is something that can help not only, you know, for overall penile health and exercising those muscles and working on strengthening them. It can also help with erection length and erection girth and help with that, like just the volume of size of the erection. I also use that laser that I mentioned, shockwave therapy, really helps with improving blood flow. And so it helps with, if people have erection issues because of a vascular issue, they're just not getting enough blood flow to the penis, a laser like that can help improve blood flow. The just general pelvic floor exercises, you know, considering that most of my patients come in with an overactive pelvic floor, the last thing that I want these patients doing is a million Kegels. So whenever we're talking about stopping the flow of urine or, you know, sitting at a stoplight and doing Kegels while you're doing that, that's a hard no for me. That's a hard stop. Because most patients, I would say, most people in the world exist in an overactive pelvic floor state. We live in a very stressful, we talk about this, anxiety-inducing just world. And so people already tend to live like this. A lot of what I do and train is kind of down-training and down-regulating your nervous system, a lot of flexibility and mobility work. And so making sure that you have like flexibility through the hips and the pelvis, doing some hip opener exercises and hip flexibility stretching, making sure that you're getting adequate blood flow to the pelvis and things aren't so tight and constricted all the time is also going to help overall pelvic and sexual health. There are a time and a place for pelvic floor strengthening exercises, so a Kegel, but I would say those are few and farther between than the down training stuff. So I spend a lot of my time in the clinic going through more mobility work and flexibility work and kind of down training muscle tissue than the up regulating stuff. Now, I always get the question of like, okay, I'm doing all of this and things are improving, things are getting better, but I also want to get back to the gym and I also want to get back to my active, like healthy, like lifestyle, like running and CrossFit or strength training, like heavy bodybuilding. Like, how does this play in? And as we talked about before, like a physically healthy body is just at baseline going to help with your overall health. But, there is such a thing as like too much and too, like the balance has to be weighed, like you can't just be all strength without working on mobility and flexibility at the same time. Because otherwise, we're just going to be kind of super tight and muscles are going to be stiff and everything's going to be locked up. And so when we're talking about, strength training and, going to the gym and cardio and all of that is great. And I never, ever tell people to stop working out. What I want people to do, though, is maybe modify their workout to incorporate more mobility work at the beginning or more stretching at the end so that the balance is leveled a little bit.
Yeah, that's super, super interesting. So it's actually going against the grain of strengthening that area, but it's actually like loosening up and, like you said, getting mobility through the hips in that area, which makes a lot of sense because of it's also ironic, and I find this, and I don't want to open up another can of worms with a question here, but especially when women come to me and they're like, okay, I've got diastasis recti, etc. Yet they're the type of people who want to do the intense spin classes, they want to do the CrossFit, they have the high stress lifestyles, and then on top of that, then they want to do the things that really like tighten them up, so to speak. So I don't want to ask the question of like how we solve that because obviously there's a lot of strengthening to do in that area. So it's a whole nother can of worms, but I can imagine that that's the case because of the majority of society right now are living in high stress positions. We're in non-optimal conditions and positions, especially when it comes to our pelvis, right? Which kind of involves every single thing. Like whilst we're both sitting down right now, it's involved, right? And it's active and it's doing something. So it's working. And how much do we give it an opportunity to open up and mobilize? So that's pretty fascinating. And the final thing I have is in regards to the Exerciser Pro, I actually got the stats and on the website it said 92% report stronger erections, 85% see gains within 60 days, and there's a 88% satisfaction rate of over 1 million plus. Why is this the first time that I've heard of anything like this? And like, are these accessible around the world? Like, and what even do you do with it? You mentioned something about putting it on in your clinic, but I don't really understand how it works.
Yeah, I mean, penis pumps have been around forever, but they've largely been focused on like, as like a sex toy or for erectile dysfunction. Exerciser is really the first brand, the first pump that's kind of marketed themselves as overall sexual health and penile health and working on exercise, literally exercising your penis, not just for. It's not a reactive tool, it's a proactive tool. So you're using the pump kind of on a daily basis, maybe use it in the shower or use it before bed, and it's something that you use just like you're going to the gym. I go every morning at 6 a.m. and you would use a pump every day to kind of pump up the penis, improve working on getting blood flow to the tissue, getting that erection, and working on strengthening the pelvic floor in that erection. But also, we talked about, an overactive pelvic floor. And if somebody's doing a million Kegels in an already upregulated state, the last thing that I want people doing is a million more Kegels. So the pump in that state can also help just improve blood flow to the tissue, right? It's not, I don't want to say it's a concept if you don't use it, you lose it. But improving blood flow and getting more blood flow to the tissue is only going to help with overall erectile strength and erectile health. So their pump is great because it's, yes, I use it in the clinic, but I also will have people can buy them online all over the world. Exerciser.com is but it's Exerciser.com, not like the typical like spelling of exerciser. And so you can order it online. You can really get it anywhere. It's one that I use in the clinic and, I'll send patients home with one or I'll have them buy one so that we can use it in tandem with what we're doing in therapy.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like we're all pro penis workouts from this conversation, but I never thought I would put that into a sentence. But I'm glad that we've had this conversation. I feel that we could probably spend another few hours speaking on this, and it makes sense now to me as well as to why this is such a fascinating concept and why your workshops are full and everything along those lines. And for the people you've piqued the curiosity of today, where is the best place for them to find you, Lance?
A couple different places. Like I mentioned, I'm on social media, Instagram and TikTok. My handle is Lance in Your Pants. and nice. if they want to go, if people want to go directly to my website, my clinic in Atlanta is flexptatl.com. They can send in if they have questions, they can reach out to me on social media or go to my website, or they can email me directly, lance@flexptatl.com.
And you mentioned you do virtual consultations as well, right? So you're accessible around the world, I should imagine, too.
Yep. People can access those through my website or through my Linktree and on all of my social media channels. Pretty easy to access it through there as well.
Amazing. And final question, what impact do you want to have on the world with the work that you do?
I want people to know that there's help for... I want to change people's perspectives on pelvic health and help people realize that there are help for certain conditions that they may otherwise have thought that they just need to live with.
Love it. I very much think you are fulfilling that mission. So we'll look forward to keeping in touch and seeing how you're getting on with that mission in the future. But Lance, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that was the Simply Fit podcast. I hope you gained a huge amount of value from today's episode. I feel inspired to improve your health and well-being. Be sure to search for Simply Fit in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcast from. And go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, if you like the episode, please don't forget to give it a 5-star rating. I'd love to hear your feedback or any questions you have. So reach out to me on social media. You'll find me on Facebook and Instagram @ElliotHassoon. Thank you so much for listening. And I look forward to talking